continue a little bit of your business progress or circumstance. You started some additional stores and
then we started the BB Furniture stores. We originally were Home Furniture. We subsequently changed the names of all the stores to BB Furniture. We opened 7 or 8 stores in Western Pennsylvania. And our business was good, and everything was fine.
Those were the years from when to when?
Well, we're now in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1977, we closed it in 78, I guess. We bought a furniture company in Miami, but in Modern Age, which was a company that had gone through bankruptcy and was taken over by Citibank of New York and was being run by the bank. And it was evidently the people that had owned it. The original owner had sold out, and then the subsequent owner was not able to make it go, but it was a big company.
What made you think of Florida?
Well, my in-laws had a home in Florida, and my parents used to vacation in Florida in the winter. So, and Florida was a growing state. In the 70s, it was here's the way. It was one of the first or second fastest growing state in the union.
That's right.
Anyhow, I knew that this opportunity existed.
Okay.
I knew that Modern Age was was for sale. Citibank didn't want to be in the furniture business. And we bought Modern Age in 1970. We started negotiating in 77. We closed the deal in 78. We took over the management in 78 and operation of Modern Age in Florida. My son, Tim, who also has an interesting family, all my kids, by the way, lived in Israel for at least a year or 2 years. They all speak Hebrew, conversational Hebrew. They all lived on kibbutzim in Israel. I was involved from when I was a kid in Federation EJA. And so consequently my children were Zionists from the beginning.
Yep.
Naomi's parents and my parents were active Zionists and Negroes. So I think it just came, it was something that came naturally in our family. I got involved here in the Federation. I think my first real serious involvement was on a trip that we took we went to Marseille, we went to Vienna.
What year?
I think that was 1963.
Mm-hmm. Before the 60 war?
Yes. It might have been earlier. We went on a trip, I was involved in the furniture division.
Yeah.
It was called the department store division. Mm-hmm. It was the furniture department stores, retailers. As a activist, solicitor,
mm-hmm.
what have you, we took a trip. There were about 9 of us from the Federation that took this trip. We went to Marseille, where we saw the Jews coming in from Morocco.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard for us to believe they were Jewish, because those title Jews looked like Arabs to all of us. We went to Paris, where we saw the Algerian Jewish community that had been absorbed into Paris. We met some wonderful people. We went to Vienna, where we saw the Jews escaping from Russia. And it was a very moving experience. The idea of us doing that, we thought we would come back instead of having speakers for the Federation, that we would do the speaking and we would try to do the fundraising after this experience. And by the way, it worked well.
any chance, was Edgar Kaufman with you?
No, but who was on that trip with me were guys who later became leaders of the mm-hmm. Federation, Alvin Rogel, mm-hmm. Leonard Rudolph. Mm-hmm. Jim Brown at that time was a professional fundraiser who worked for the Federation. He loved the group. Anyhow, it was a very moving experience for us.
Yeah, and a quality group of people.
And we came back and we did a lot of the fundraising. Mm-hmm. Later I became campaign chairman, mm-hmm. president of the Federation.
What year was that?
Well, I'm just going up.
I was very young. I was
president,
I think,
72,
73. Uh-huh. Okay.
Say that
again,
please. I was campaign chairman, 69 to 70.
Mm-hmm.
And I was president, 74, 75, 76.
Mm-hmm. What year were you president? 74, 75?
76.
Mm-hmm. I went through the whole gamut of positions. I was social planning and budgeting chairman, campaign chairman, endowment chairman, all those things that run the course of the guys that are activists, and I think all of us have done the same thing.
Did you have an interest in any of the contentious difficulties of that period? There was the Hebrew Institute, there was the Montefiore Hospital.
Yes, I was involved in all.
Well, I'd like you to say whatever you want to about them.
Well, it was interesting. When the Montefiore Hospital decided to become a part of the university, that was a very difficult time for this Jewish community, in my opinion. It so happened that the Chancellor of the University of Pittsburgh, Russell Passbach, was a close friend of mine. We were classmates at West Point and good friends at West Point and remain good friends to this day. And when this thing first took place, and I was on the, I was on the board of the Montefiore at that time, I thought it was a wonderful thing for the community and for the hospital. A teaching hospital, part of the university, and I knew from Russell Passbach that he had great expectations for the university and their whole medical center back then. He was a very, very bright and capable guy. And so I was privy to that. I think Milton Porter was close to the hospital those days when that took place. And a lot of my friends were doctors, and they started to leave the hospital, and they were complaining, and they didn't want a resident to oversee write orders for them or do things. They wanted to be their own man, and they left the hospital.
Can you name one or two? Do you remember any of them?
I remember quite a few from the left.
No, I'm trying to provoke you to...
Okay. Well, I was about a very close friend of mine, Dr. Lloyd Kessler, left for a house. He's an oral surgeon and an activist in the community today and a wonderful guy. And I knew him from when he was... He and I went to Penn State together. We were the same age, the same class. I didn't want him to leave Montefiore. He's a very capable guy. And there were others. I think Chef Isaacson left Montefiore. There were a lot of doctors that left Montefiore because they were just afraid of the situation. Well, I don't have to tell you the history of Montefiore, what happened subsequently.
I don't want any more of that.
You know that.
Yes.
The Hebrew Institute, I don't know who the president of the Institute was at that time, and we had all of those, you know, what happened in Israel just the other day, just horrible. Jews fighting Jews is a pathetic thing. And we, in our little way in the city, we had that little problem going on. It was nothing like on Israel Day, of course, but it was a situation where there was a friction between...
I'm asking you to identify either the cause of the friction or any of the people involved.
I think that a lot of the... I'm not hedging that book, but
yeah.
I think a lot of these things happen because people just don't really understand the facts, and they don't try to get to the facts, to the bottom. I think, for example, with the doctors, I think they overreacted to what would happen to them. I think it was overreaction, maybe doctors won't agree with me, but we discussed it many times, many, many times.
You see, we have Lloyd Kessler's story.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. And I was asking you from a totally different perspective, that is, on the board of this, and he was the doctor.
Well, I think Lloyd made a mistake in this, as far as I was concerned. I tried to talk to him about that. But what was his decision? And Lloyd's a great guy, and if he made his decision, I respected it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't agree with it, but I respected it.
Well, in hindsight now, considering the fact that Montefiore is totally part of the university system, was that a good happening, and is there a connection?
Well, I think that that is far afield from what happened.
Yep, I know that.
I think the fact that we sold Montefiore Hospital to the university was a tough decision for the community to make, but I think it turned out to be a wonderful decision.
I agree with that.
We have this wonderful foundation that does wonderful things, and we have a lot of money, and it's great. It's great.
Are you on the foundation board?
No, I'm not. I live in Florida now.
Mm-hmm.
Close to 6 months a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to be as active when you're out of this community.
Mm-hmm.
But I was all for it, and
mm-hmm.
I think that was an otherwise decision the community made. The community has made a lot of good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we made some bad ones, but I think by and large, we're on the right side of the ledger. Being the president of the Federation, when I called sheriff, was a great experience. I loved it.
What was your professional dad? In the years you were
Jerry Sharoka was the executive vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And then during my presidency, Jerry was the executive.
Yes.
And subsequently, Bill Kahn came in and hired Rieger, of course. And we've been very fortunate in this city. We've had wonderful executives at the Federation. Before that was name escapes. He went to Baltimore. He was wonderful. He came from Cleveland too. Cleveland was the birthplace of most executives of the Federation movement around the country, because Cleveland historically has been the number one city in America.
Interestingly, I would have expected Philadelphia to have been.
Cleveland. They had an executive up there by the name of Hank Sucker.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland, and he was the trainer of all these guys, the Rokers and the Riggers, he's a wonderful teacher, very exceptional man, and Cleveland historically has been the number one city in the country in per capita giving, and they have great families up there.
Yes, you can tell when you go to see a Jewish construction of support system in Cleveland.
Right, it's just marvelous.
Marvelous.
Well, we don't have to take a back seat. Cleveland doesn't have to take a back seat. When I was the campaign chairman, I remember back in 69, we were the third city in the country in per capita giving.
Mm-hmm.
And we remained that way for many, many years. I don't think we are left today, but we still
do
exceptionally well.
Because
we can't forget that we have a diminishing Jewish population here in Pittsburgh.
Well, yes, you mentioned it's per capita.
Yeah.
I want to close out an issue before we go on to something else.
All right.
That was the issue of business. We went from discussion of, you started that thing in Florida.
Yeah, we bought Modern Age in 78.
Then what happened to that?
On
your participation, and when did you stop?
We took it over in 78, and about 6 months later, but my son Tim, he had a lot of experience. After high school, he went to Israel for a year. He lived in Israel, lived on the kibbutz for a year, then went to the University of Arizona. The war broke out, we went before war in 73, caught me from the University of Arizona. He says, I got to get to Israel. I know they're going to need help. I want to get back to the kibbutz. This is harvest time for the cotton. They raise cotton on this kibbutz. That he had been living upon. Anyhow, and my daughter Kathy was already in Israel. kibbutz up in the Jezreel Valley, and I said, Tony, Kathy's in Israel and those wars and going so great, and I don't want to have two kids there. He said, but I've got to get there because I know they need help.
I had a daughter there, same guy.
So anyhow, I got in. It was hard. They didn't want people coming to Israel in those places. And anyhow, he says, I know you can use your influence to get me there. So I got him there. And he then stayed for another whole year.
Yeah.
And interesting, because Butch offered him a membership by the kibbutz, which they don't really didn't often do to Americans. Then he came back and he went to the University of Arizona. He graduated.
Mm-hmm.
He made an application to three law schools and he was accepted. And then he calls me one day and he says, Dad, he says, I think I'm going to come into business. I can always go to law school. I said, great. I mean, I wasn't going to push him to do it, but by the way, he was a candidate for a Rhodes Scholarship from his school, which we were very proud of.
His school, which school?
The University of Arizona.
Okay, right.
And that was what they call the Southwest region. It included Arizona and New Mexico and California. He did not get the appointment, but he was a finalist, which in itself we were very proud of.
Yes.
Anyhow, he came into the business, and he came, our offices were in those days in Greensburg. We had our distribution center, our warehouse, and our computer center, and our offices in Greensburg. And he came into the business, and that was just about a year before we, I was already negotiating, it was a modern age deal, and about a year before we took it over. So here he was, he was, I don't know how old in those days, he was probably 26. And when we bought Modern Age, we had a guy who was the president of the company who was running it, and we kept him on board. And I went down there and spent 6 months getting it organized and changing personnel and putting in a new computer system and all the things you have to do when you buy a new business and are trying to organize it. Well, I made a decision that the guy that was running the company was not strong enough to run this company. This is a very growing, we had already started to make it grow. And we were growing the company as far back as 78 when we took it over. 6 months after we took it over, it was growing very well and making a nice profit.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to Tim one day, I said, Tim, would you like to move to Miami and run this company for us? And he said, I have to think about that. And I said, well, you think about it. You and Helene, his wife, was Helene, and they had no children at this point in time. I said, why don't you come on down and spend a month or whatever, just look at the company and analyze it and see what you think you could do with it. Make a long story short, he took over the reins of that company and sometime in 79 and grew it tremendously.
Okay, I was going to ask you this question. Now I'm going to ask it.
Yeah.
Regarding business. What made you think that Tim had the entrepreneurial talent? It's a very multifaceted question, and I want you to cope with that, both with respect to yourself and Tim. You know, you both made the business grow. I'll just let it go at that.
All right. Tim not only was a smart kid.
But the other guys were too. So.
I know, but he was pragmatic too. I think.
Well, the entrepreneurial talent.
All right. Well, I think he was a very pragmatic guy. He was a wonderful people guy.
Pragmatic people.
Right. Well, that's important. I mean, people that worked for him, even in Greensburg, when he first came to our stores here, he was in the. He was in the back. He was in the back. But he made sure that he visited stores. He knew the people. They knew him. And people all liked him. Timmy has a fabulous personality. He's a good thinker. He's a people person. He's bright. He has all the things that, and he's a hard worker, industrious. And he wanted to succeed.
Oh, good.
And these are the things I think that that made me convinced in my own mind that he'd be the right guy to run the business.
Did you analyze it that way?
I did. I did, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went down there, he just proved that all those things that I had thought about him mm-hmm. came to fruition. They were true.
Mm-hmm.
And he grew that business tremendously.
Is he still?
No. And Timmy left the business. We brought in we were going to take our business public, and we had had hired an attorney who took a couple of businesses public, and friends of mine took them public. He was an attorney from Washington, D.C., and that was his business, taking
mm-hmm.
companies public. And he had recommended that Timmy was now about 29 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He went there when he was about 26, 25 or 26, 4 years later. In the 4 years, he had about tripled the business,
mm-hmm.
or quadrupled it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was running that business. It was a very successful business, and this guy was going to take us public, and he said, I would think that if you're going to take it public, that he says, I have all the respect in the world for your son. He's 28 years old, 28, I think. Anyhow, he said, well, I think we ought to bring in a big name. So I talked to Tim about it. I said, well, listen, you know, you don't take something when it's not broken. I don't know how smart that would be. I said, how important is that to the public issue? So he said, I think it is important. He says, particularly the public issue. He says, I don't think.
Who said?
Tim will be more of the attorney.
The attorney,
the guy who was going to handle the public issue. So I was foolish enough. Retrospectively, I was foolish. We hired a guy from Macy's in New York. He was number three guy at Macy's. Paid him about three times what we were paying Tim and brought him in. And I talked to Tim about it. And he said, you know, I think that's not a bad idea. He says, because I've been thinking that I want to do something different. I want to do something where Israel's involved. He says, I believe that I can bring Israeli products here to America and sell them. He says, they got so many good ideas over there. And Timmy was involved with the Young Leadership Division of UJA. He was chairman of the South Eastern region of the young leadership for UJA. And so he said, I think it's a perfect opportunity for both you and for me. So he went along with it, and he resigned from our company to do his own thing. And he started a company that was, he called it Genesis, which was a good name. That's the first chapter. He started to bring Israeli stuff into America to try to sell it. He bought a software program from a kibbutz. He brought in other products. He was in Israel all the time. And unfortunately, the marketing of that stuff was very difficult. It was very difficult. Not because of him as much as it was because of the Israeli partners. They were very, very difficult people to convince that they didn't have any marketing know-how, that they should leave all that to the American side and they should just do the inventiveness. And the business, although it did okay, it didn't do great. And it had an awful lot of lead weight attached to it that was very hard to pull.
But was it primarily software?
No, it was all sorts of things. Software, they had another product that was a product that you sprayed. It was really pretty indigenous to Florida because you sprayed the orchards, the fruit orchards, the orange orchards and the grapefruit orchards with a certain kind of a spray that kept the fruit from freezing when they'd have a quick freeze, which
mm-hmm.
they do in Florida, and cost them millions and millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the products. Software was one of the products. There are other Israeli products that I don't recall at this time, but that was the kind of things
mm-hmm.
that they were bringing in, all stuff that were unique.
Really quite.
Very unique.
Yeah.
And created in Israel, because as we all know, Israel's biggest inventory is brain parts of any country in the world. And anyhow, that's what he did. So he left the business at that point in time. We sold out in 19, 89.
I want you to get that. You involved Timmy in the business down in Florida.
Right.
What happened with you? Finally, you got out in 89?
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to close the gap between...
It's about Timmy left the business, I think, in 83.
Well, bad business. What about the BG or
GB?
GB stuff?
Yeah, well, it was still going up there.
Here?
Yeah.
And who was its manager?
My brother-in-law was running it. My son-in-law was in the business at the time, but he left that business because it really was very difficult for him. He was now above it.
And there were obligations.
Oh, he had all sorts of obligations, which I respected. We all knew it. That was not the problem. The problem was that he had philosophical problems in his own mind. How can, Saturday's the biggest retail day of the year. And we ran a lot of promotions.
Yeah.
And everything was geared to a Saturday weekend
selling.
And he was very difficult for him to work with that sort of a philosophy when he was now dedicating his life to not only the business, but to religion. Now, not that Lubavitch don't want the guys to be successful businessmen. But
they do.
They do. But Yitzhak philosophically found that hard to handle.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, Tom Kosher was for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew about it. He knew about it. So we met with Herb. I can't think of his last name, the guy who owned it.
Mm-hmm.
And had some meetings with him and discussions with him. And I thought it was a perfect kind of business for him because it's closed on all the Jewish holidays. It's strictly glut kosher. All the things that philosophically he could live with.
Mm-hmm.
So he left the business. We closed up our stores up here in 1988. At that time, Wolf Furniture bought some of our stores, and some other ones we closed on. So we had no, and my brother-in-law passed away. So we had nobody.
Also, wasn't the furniture business had been changing to another mode of?
I think there were changes in the furniture business, but I don't think that wasn't really a real reason.
Uh-huh.
And so we did close the business in 1988. And we were out of that business up here.
Yes.
And Glasser Brothers closed.
Yes.
TV stores, the department stores closed.
Yes.
About the same time, or maybe a year later. It's just about the same time. So then I had nobody in the business in Florida. We decided to sell Florida, and we sold 89.
Mm-hmm. You were down in furniture, both Western Pennsylvania and Florida by 88 or 89.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I've
been sort of retired, I think.
Okay, so what do you do?
Well, Yitzhak was in Israel. My son-in-law was in Israel about 3 years ago, visiting his family. And a Israeli guy sat him out, and he said that he knew that I was his father-in-law. He wondered if I would have an interest in putting money in his business. His business was, he had invented a methodology to retrofit computerized machinery used in the manufacture of furniture. And he thought that I, because of my position in the industry, we know a lot of people in the industry, would I set up a selling organization, a distribution organization for him here in the States, and put some money in his business, would he need it. So it's like, said, well, he had no idea whether I'd want to do that or not, but I was now like semi-retired, and we have some real estate holdings and things like that that I'd look over. But I'm still active. I'm still chairman of APEC, and I'm very involved with APEC. I find politics fascinating. And so I think, it's like, I don't think I'd want to, but look, if he's coming to the States, I certainly would sit down and discuss it with him. Well, he came here to Pittsburgh, came to this house, and I met with him. He was a very interesting and wonderful, brilliant Israeli guy. He graduated from the Technion, summa cum laude. He had gone to the Israel aircraft industry. Rose right up to when Art Swimmer was the president, become assistant to Art Swimmer in 7 years. So I knew that he was a very bright guy. Interestingly enough, he got involved in this machinery because his family escaped Germany and went to Palestine. And they were in the machinery business in Germany. And that's how he got involved in the machinery. So his father said to him, why don't you, he has all these machines, they sell to all sorts of industries, and some of the furniture industry. He says, why don't you look at these machines, Speaker, and why can't we automate these machines? Why can't we computerize them? Why do you have to turn these cranks by hand? There has to be a better way.
Well, that just has been done with machine tools.
Oh, sure, it's been done in all industries, we're out in the furniture industry. That's the end of the day. I didn't want to get involved, but I got involved. I saw it as a little avocation. I thought I would do something. Now it's become sort of a vocation.